Welcome back to Silver Lake TV. I'm John Papa, Silver Lake Evangelist with Microsoft. And today, I've got another member of the Resources team, Kyle McClellan. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
And tell us about what you do on the Resources team.
So I'm a developer. I work on Azure stuff, so reintegration with Azure. I work on the domain data source, the authentication and authorization, all the templates, like the business application template and the domain services stuff.
And you're pretty active on the forums, I see. With your name
there,
answering questions for the Resources Forum, right?
Yeah. I try to get out there, see what people are having trouble with, try to give them pointers in the right direction.
So I've asked you to come on because we're doing a nice series with the Resources team where we've had Dipesh and Sarab and now yourself to get on and talk about different questions that people have from the Resources Forum, and we'll actually answer them right here on the show.
You know, every couple months, I send out an email that says, hey, we're still seeing these questions. Let's see what we can do about it.
Yeah, which tells us a lot of things. One is, if people are struggling with it, we need to be better about communicating it, and we meaning all of us, in my role as well. And then it also means that maybe in some cases just education and evangelizing, like I do. In other cases, it's more we have to figure out how to make the product smarter.
Yeah, some stuff is just hard, and we just keep working on it to make it better.
And a lot of it's communications. It tends to be, people get the domain service, they get the client side, but how do I get between? But let's not dive too deep right yet. We've got a couple topics we're going to talk about. We just talked about the demo here, and we've got lots of code to share. So we're going to talk about some issues about creating custom validation options, how to extend your metadata or change the metadata that's given to you, some errors and exceptions, how you can examine them and figure out what's going wrong when my domain service just says there's an error.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit more. It might be more useful. And then we had something else we were talking about. It's escaping me already.
Combo boxes. Data forms and data grid.
So let's dive right in. I'll let you get right to your demo.
For this first one, investigating exceptions that are thrown from domain context. What we tend to see if you run up your application, this was the successful version of my application.
Yes.
I'm going to restart it for us. So I'll introduce a programming error here. No reference exception, obvious here, but might not be obvious, when you're...
Yeah, and while we wouldn't write that code, we might just have some kind of an object we're going to get, and we forget to initialize it, or the method returns a null object. So this is pretty common.
Right. It's used before you've initialized it or something like that. So what we'll see almost all the time is this stock error, which is load operation failed for query X get user, very commonly. In this case, it's get employees.
So we know we have an error with the get employees method. At least that narrows it down to where we should look inside the domain service.
Right. It's a good place to start. But if we look at the rest of this, the rest of the message doesn't say a whole lot.
It doesn't tell us it was a null reference.
Nope. Gives you the type. And if you look at the stack trace, there's not a whole lot there. Web domain client dot end query core.
Right. So basically, this is useless for us. How do we make it better?
Yeah. So anytime we see this, what we have to start thinking is, all right, well, this is an error that occurred on the server. So we've got to figure out, what's happening on the server to cause this. So the first thing we'll do is we'll open up our web config file here. And we're going to temporarily set our custom errors mode to off. And what that allows is that allows the RIA stack to send more error details.
Okay.
Across.
And you wouldn't want to do this in a production environment because it's exposing what you're doing in a programming layer to the users.
Sending all your debug information to users.
Right.
Not the best idea, but.
Yeah, but great for debugging.
Oh, yeah. So we'll see the application comes up, and we still see the same error, load operation failed for get employees, but after that it gets more useful, object reference not set to instance of an object, so that's going to be our null reference exception.
Right, we know something in that method, but there could be more than two lines of code like ours has, maybe it doesn't narrow it down exactly for us yet.
Right, and then you can go to the stack trace and... this is exactly the stack trace we want. This is employee domain service, get employees method, line 22. So sometimes this is enough, but sometimes it isn't. So one of the other approaches you can take to get this information.
And the danger of this as well is people generally forget to turn, at least I know, I forget to turn the custom errors back on.
It's true. One of the other common tools out there is Fiddler, which will look at your requests and responses going across the mm-hmm. wire. So what we can do, if you're going to use Fiddler in a local host environment or in your development environment, what you need to do is put a period here right after localhost before the colon and the port number.
Because otherwise Fiddler will ignore the localhost calls. Yep. You won't see any traffic. Okay, now it's rendering.
So what we see is exactly the same thing, but if you go back to Fiddler, you can take a look at this last request here, and we can see down at the bottom of the screen that it was a call to get employees.
Right, so we know that's the call that we made.
And we can then go to the text, inspect the text, and we'll see that even though the request returned with a 200 response, which typically indicates success, what we're actually returning is a domain service fault.
Right, and that's when you get into fault exceptions.
Mm-hmm. And that fault's got all the information that that we were hoping to get out of it. It's got the stack trace and the location of the error.
Right, and the reason it returns a 200 is because that's the way the communication comes back if it's the browser. The browser has to inspect the status message to figure out, do I process this or is it an error? So it's in a way, it's tricking the browser into thinking it's success with the 200, but right. we're actually passing a fault. So Silverlight's right. job then to pick up, what do I do with this fault?
Right, and the domain context takes this, transforms it into an exception that it then throws.
Right.
And I'll close this down and bring up one more approach we might take is to override the onError method in your domain service. If you need another place to inspect the data, you can set breakpoints here.
Yeah, this is nice too, because we talked a little bit about having try catches inside of the methods, but I like this technique because it allows you to have one place in your code, even if you want to comment it out later, one place in your code to check all the errors that happen to your domain context.
Right.
Sorry, your domain service.
Right.
And not your domain context.
It's great for logging or, you know, there's all sorts of reasons you would go back here. What you'll see here is where we used to be seeing an exception that said load operation failed for, we've now transformed it into there was a null reference exception in your domain service, right? And this is very clear. We know what's going on.
And can you flip back to the code real quick just to show what we changed there? So in the on error, we're checking to see if it's a null reference exception. If it's that type, you're actually creating a new exception of domain exception and creating your own custom message.
Yeah.
And I assume on the far right, you're actually stacking the error in the inner yep. exception. Okay.
Yep, and it's...
So you're not losing anything from the original exception. You're just adding on to it.
Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to do with this, these three approaches, was not to use the debugger, because if you're doing this on your dev box, just use the debugger for throwing exceptions, right? But you know, it gets quite a bit more complicated when you get into deployment scenarios where you may or may not be able to debug.
And if you deploy this, you're not going to go back and add a new error handler and deploy it again. You could, but it'd be easier if it's already deployed to either change a web config if you have access to the server or to use something like Fiddler.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the different options, it's not one's better than the other. It might work different depending upon your situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you get the information you need out of one of them, stick with it until you have need for another one.
Great. Okay, let's move on to, I think combo boxes was the next topic we were going to talk about.
Oftentimes with combo boxes, you have a static list of data or maybe something you're pulling from your database mm-hmm. or, here are the values I want for a field, right? So what we're going to do in this example is we'll just start at our domain service.
Okay.
And we'll create
we're already there, so.
I know. So much easier that way. We'll just create a invoke operation that returns static list of data.
Right. And this could hit a database or an Excel file, whatever. It's just we mm-hmm. want to return a list of states or countries.
Yeah. And from there, we'll flip over to the client-side XAML file.
Okay.
And the first thing we have to do is create a data source to load this data.
All right.
You may notice I'm not using the domain data source. In this case, since we're loading just a static set of strings, that's not one of the capabilities of the DDS. But here we have a custom combo box data source that does that very nicely. And you can see we've told it the operation name is mm-hmm. our get country strings.
Right.
Then down here in my data grid, I'll swap out this country text column for a template column that contains a combo box.
Okay, so we've just, now, instead of using a data grid text column, we're using a combo box. If I walk through this here, the item source is going to be that combo box data source you created. The selected item is going to bind to your normal object. Yep, there we go.
There you go.
And you've set the mode async eager, which I'm assuming is going to go and preload the list for you.
Yeah, that's an extension I built that just it makes it feel a lot nicer.
Mm-hmm. And the reason we're going about this and not using the domain data source, let's take a quick step back on that, because I assume your data source or combo box is an extension that you wrote. That's up on your website,
correct.
I think you said?
Yeah, it's on my blog.
Okay.
Actually, it's on the Rhea sample site, but I explained it and
explained
how to use
blog.
It on my blog.
And we'll put links up there for everybody, so we're good to go. But why did we have to go this route as opposed to just binding this to an existing data source?
So there's I think the easy answer is, in this case, we were pulling a static list of strings.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that in Rhea services, you have to use a invoke operation and not a query operation.
Right.
And the domain data source is only tuned to do query operations.
Right.
So since it's a different operation type, we have to use a different data source type.
So if we had our list of, let's say, we're just talking about the problems we're solving, if we had a list of countries that were being loaded from a database, that were loaded into some kind of object model, would we have to go down this route, or would we be able to use the existing domain data source?
You could use the domain data source.
Okay.
And I'll be the first one to say that it works great in 50% of your scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's that other 50%, just use this combo box data source. It works great in all scenarios. And then you don't have to figure out when to use one, when to use the other.
Okay. So the DD, when we say 50%, we're just talking about combo box scenarios in specific, right?
Yeah. Specifically with respect to the combo box.
And the whole point of the DDS, again, is to alleviate most of the issues that you're going to encounter. But that's the whole reason there's still domain context, and we still got an API we can program against in case the DDS doesn't take us the full 100 yards down the field.
Right, exactly.
Little football analogy. It's NFL season, got to get excited. Okay, cool. So I put you on the spot a little bit. Now let's see how this actually works.
Well, before we do, I'll flip the data form one as well.
That would help, wouldn't it?
This is a data field. And what we do is just flip from text box there to a combo box.
So you've got a data grid, and where is the data form defined?
It's in the middle here, so you have your data form.
Right below the data grid.
Right below the data grid, yeah. It's a standard master details kind of setup. So hopefully I remember to take out that programming error, though.
I think we forgot, honestly.
I know, right now.
Nope, we forgot. That never happens in real life.
Yeah.
Programmers never get exceptions, unintentionally.
Oh, there we go. That's exactly where my stack trace was pointing me to.
While you're recompiling, I had a quick anecdote. There's a gentleman who used to work for me years ago. And he couldn't test something because nothing ever exceeded the order value. So I asked him, why don't you just hard code in, always return $9 million for this one order? And then it'll prove to you that if this fails or not. So he did that. He rolled it out to production like that. And every order we printed off that day in the company.
$9 million order?
Yes.
That's
the company
good.
Got very profitable that day.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting. Yes, we caught it in time. But
it was the day after that was the problem.
Yeah, I guess he's like, and he kept on saying to me, well, you never told me to take it out, so it was my fault.
So here we've got the data grid and the data form it's bound to, and if you go to the country column, see now we have this list of the two strings we returned from our domain service.
And you don't have to wait for it to load or anything, so you're good to go. And every one of those columns will have the combo box and your data form as well.
Yep.
Sweet.
So if you are using Rhea services and want to look at the generated code,
mm-hmm.
you can go to the Silverlight node and click the Show All Files button. And when we do that, you see the generated code folder, and we can open up our generated code file.
Yep. So in here we've got all our domain objects, domain context, all the stuff that got generated from the server to the client.
So I'm going to hop down to the employee type. So I can sort of define the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what we get, we see this first name property. has these validation attributes for required and string length on it. Mm-hmm. And when I was putting together this domain service, I didn't do anything special to get these attributes. So they're here because the Rhea services code generator goes off to the database metadata and converts that into validation metadata.
Right.
And the idea is that what we're doing is we're allowing you to, or preventing you from inputting a first name on the client that's then going to be rejected when you try to stuff it in your database.
Right.
But sometimes, sometimes the rules we generate aren't exactly what you want. So from here, we'll flip back to the...
And a good example of that might be, let's say the first name would always be required, but in this case, let's say first name, you do want it required in the database, but your business object, you might have some rules on it, or the screen you're coming from. Maybe mm-hmm. that's not where the first name gets entered.
Right.
Maybe the rest of it gets filled in, and their business rules fill that in.
Right.
So you don't want it to fail on the client, because the server might be handling it.
Exactly. So what we're going to do here is we'll say...
We're on the server now, right?
Yes, we are. We're in the metadata class that was generated along with our domain service.
Okay.
And what we've done is we've said for this employee type that we're generating, let's define some metadata for it. And specifically, if we look at the first name property, what we're going to say is, yes, it's required, mm-hmm. but we're going to allow empty strings for it.
So this is going to override the attribute required that's in the other metadata class, the one that gets generated, and replace it with your required attribute,
right.
allowing empty strings. And it doesn't affect, I mean, string length is on there, so it'll still stay on. And if you wanted, I assume you could add your additional attributes here too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, anything you want, just add to this class.
So it takes the union of the two sets of metadata, mm-hmm. puts them together, and where there's duplicates, it takes the one from your metadata override
right.
class. Okay.
So what we'll do is we'll rebuild, and Visual Studio will tell us that our generated file changed.
Yep.
So we'll go back and take a look at that quickly.
And our first name property should be different.
Yeah, and now we see that the required attribute, which we had changed on the server, mm-hmm. now allows empty strings and has our custom error message.
Right. Which is great, because this way we've got a way to, on the server, define what our metadata should look like without changing generated data, which is always a bad idea. You never want to go to the
right.
end result and change that, because it gets written over. But this is also good that it does it on the server, because if something on the server needed to use these objects, they're also getting that metadata as well.
Right.
So it's not just the Silverlight client. You might have business rules in the server and the client, which could be a good practice too. So now we know how to deal with adding metadata or extending it or changing it. What if I've got two properties and they need to cross-validate?
Right. So the idea here was, well, you know, we don't actually... The first name and last name are still required, but we allow you to put in empty strings. But we don't actually want you to go without any name.
Right.
We're going to say you can have one blank or the other one blank, but not both of them.
Right. You might be Madonna, and
exactly.
that's it. But we don't want you to be blank blank.
Right. And you're an employee of this corporation.
Exactly.
So what we've done here is we've defined a custom validation method. And we apply it at our entity level, so it can go down into the entity and look at all its properties.
Right.
So here we'll take a look at this validation method. It's pretty simple. You know, first name, we'll just make sure they're both not null.
Right.
And if they are, then we'll return a new validation result that identifies them as the culprits of this.
And don't forget the validation result success. It's something I often forget as well.
At the end, so it's always a failure.
Yes.
Every scenario.
Why is it failing?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to subscribe to the John Popper rule of exceptions. I generally hit all the ones that nobody else hits.
And so what we see, we updated that required attribute, so we're able to go in and delete these.
Right.
First name and last name now. That's acceptable. But what we decided is not okay anymore is deleting both of them and...
Boom. Our validation summary lets us know and our validation on the line.
Right.
Hey, Kyle, I really appreciate you going through this. We've got tons of more questions in the forum, so I'm sure we'll be hitting your team up for more
yeah.
information. But in summary, I think debugging Rhea services, while it's a great tool, anytime you add more code, you've got more to debug. So we've talked about how to debug domain services. We've talked about validation issues. Cross-validation is a big thing. I know you and I were talking before the show about maybe discussing at some point some more validation topics. So maybe I can convince you or your team to come on about
that.
Yeah,
yeah, there's plenty of stuff to talk about there.
Validation's a big thing. And having your data, forms over data applications are very popular, but having your data truly validate the way you want, and I don't think I've ever worked on two projects where they're exactly the same needs.
Right.
Sometimes it comes from here, sometimes it comes from there. Anyway, we'll get into that in a future episode. But I appreciate you coming on and discussing all this, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm glad I had the opportunity. Hopefully we got some of these answers out there. So
I think we did.
People have a place to start.
We've got plenty more to go over, and if you all have any other questions, please let us know. And I thank you all for watching Silverlight TV.